we're talking about the revealing. That's the series that we're going through right now. And this morning is on divorce revealed. Okay. So it's a very contemporary topic. It's one that a lot of us have had to battle through. It may even be a topic that sometimes comes up in your family. And that they have heard things like this, that, hey, doesn't the Bible talk about that God hates divorce, and therefore if he hates divorce, he hates divorced people? There have been some things thrown around that are partially true. And when you get partial truth, what is that? It's a full lie, okay? If your kids tell you something that's not quite true, it's a full lie. You feel it. You know, man, they didn't tell me the whole truth, and it feels like a whole lie. It's because it is. And so we're going to talk this morning and unpack a little bit of it. This is probably a subject that needs like 3 or 4 weeks to go through everything, but we're going to tackle it this morning and do our very best. We're in Mark chapter 10. I'll give you a moment to turn there. Mark chapter 10, and we're going to talk about divorce revealed. So here's some of the background before we get into it, okay? So as you go through your outline there, that's on the back of your guide. They're passing through Herod Antipas's territory. Okay, now that may not mean a whole lot to you, but we'll explain why. This is where John the Baptist was beheaded for critiquing his marriage. Okay, so there in your outline, this is where John the Baptist was beheaded for critiquing his marriage. So here's what happened. This Herod Antipas dude, typical guy that gets power and everything goes to his head and he thinks he can do whatever he wants to. And he has this marriage, and then he has this really interesting thing where his brother's wife divorces him and he marries his brother's wife. I mean, it's just, ooh, you're talking about strange, okay? This is worse than the Kardashians, okay? So if you're, you know, I mean, if they had reality series in that day, you'd want to follow around Herod because you're talking about a weird Thanksgiving. Okay, you know, here was your brother's wife that you've now married. And so John the Baptist speaks out against this, and he goes, this is terrible. This is not at all what we should be doing. And they throw him in prison, and later on, John the Baptist beheaded. Jesus is walking through that territory. And there's some people that say, hey, what do you think about this whole thing with divorce? Now, what do you think they're trying to do? They're trying to set up Jesus to say, well, you know, maybe the same thing will happen to him. Maybe we can get Jesus to be quiet, to shut up, because we're going to send him to this territory. We don't have to mess with him again because Herod Antipas will. Okay, so it's a little bit of a setup. The next part is this. Two rabbis were the primary teachers right before Jesus. Okay, they were the ones that opened up scripture and they told people, hey, this is what this stuff really means. If you've read through any of the Old Testament and you get to all of the laws, you cannot tell me that you hadn't went, say, what? What was that one all about? I don't get that. So they had some rabbis that kind of came to prominence, and there was two ways of thinking. One was Hillel, and one was Shammai. Now, not like Shamu, okay, like when you went to go see the whale. All right, not that guy. Shammai. Now, the interesting part about this is Hillel was the teacher to Shammai. Hillel had a much more liberal view of things. Shammai was much more tight, much more conservative with his approach. So here's what Hillel taught. Hillel taught a man could divorce on any ground. It didn't matter what it was. He just didn't like her. He didn't like her hairstyle, whatever it may be. You can divorce her. Okay? The pupil, Shammai, taught that a man could divorce only on moral grounds. So here's what happens. You've got these two teachings. You got the one that's extremely liberal, just, hey, just whatever you want to do. And the other one's very, very tight. And it is a legitimate question, but they're raising the question in Herod Antipas's territory. And so they say, hey, what do you think about this whole divorce thing? You know, because Moses said this. And we're going to look at that here in just a second. The disciples want to revisit this issue in private because they can't see how anyone could stay married. Okay, you're going to see their response in here. So let's look at Mark chapter 10. Then Jesus left Capernaum and went down the region of Judea and into the area east of the Jordan River. Once again, crowds gathered around him, and as usual, he was teaching them. Some Pharisees came and tried to trap him with this question. Okay, you remember what the trap is? It's Herod Antipas. Okay. Should a man be allowed to divorce his wife? Okay, so now then Jesus has got to go on public record. Jesus answered them with a question. What did Moses say in the law about divorce? Well, he permitted it, they replied. He said a man can give his wife a written notice of divorce and send her away. But Jesus responded, he wrote this commandment only as a concession to your hard hearts. But God made them male and female from the very beginning of creation. This explains why a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. Since they are no longer two but one, let no one split apart what God has joined together. Later, when he was alone with his disciples in the house again, they brought up the subject again. He told them, whoever divorces his wife and marries someone else commits adultery against her. And if a woman divorces her husband and marries someone else, she commits adultery. Now, let's just kind of pause there. There's also Matthew takes into this account, and he brings into it kind of his first person point of view. And the disciples go, wow, this is really hard. Who could do this? Okay, so what their disciples are used to is watching divorce after divorce after divorce after divorce. And they're going, well, who could ever stay married? This is uncanny. You think we have it bad now in the United States, okay, with divorce? It was nothing like what was beginning to happen at that time. Because if you were taught that you could divorce for any reason whatsoever, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think there's going to be a lot of solid marriages? Or do you think that just the first sign of trouble, people are out? They're out. They're going somewhere else. Matter of fact, Paul picks this up in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. And he begins to talk through the questions of the Corinthian church. Now, you need to understand that the Corinthian church were living in a time that sexual promiscuity was out in public and out in the open. As a matter of fact, one of the historians records that one lady was marrying for her 27th time to a man that it was his 26th time. You think we've got it bad? But here's this little church in the middle of Corinth that is starting to see these claims of Jesus, realizing, whoa, we haven't lived the right way at all. And now then they start getting some teaching to say, you know, something you shouldn't be married at all. And that's why Paul steps in 1 Corinthians 7 and says, no, if you don't get married, you do well. If you get married, you do well. It's okay either way, but if God has given you a gift that you're not supposed to be married, then that's fine. Exercise that gift. But if God is telling you that you're supposed to be married, then it's a good thing. And so they wrote him and said, oh man, because in the middle of all the sexual promiscuity, they start going, whoa, maybe this is an evil thing. And Paul writes back and says, no, it is God who invented sex. It is God who invented marriage. And it's okay if you do. It's okay if you don't. But stay as you can together. And then they start going, well, wait a second. I became a Christian and my wife is not a Christian. So I should divorce her. And so people were divorcing them. And he was like, no, you shouldn't do that. You're not reflecting who God is. By the way, if someone said to you, you're a Corinthian, in this day and time, what that would mean is you're sexually explicit. You're sexually crazy. It was not a compliment. And in the middle of all of that craziness going on, all of a sudden a little church is born. Can you imagine the questions they would have had? Tons of them. What do I do? I've been married for the 14th time, and now that I realize that this wasn't good, and now then does God hate me for forever because I read that God hates divorce? And all of a sudden, can you imagine the questions? Man, a pastor had been busy the whole time trying to figure out who is supposed to be married to whom and what's supposed to happen. And some of them were getting a divorce and getting back with their spouse, first of all, because now that they had become a Christian. And Paul had to step in the middle of all of that craziness and say, no, don't do all that. You need to stop. You need to calm down and just wait. And so let's talk a little bit this morning about what it means. Okay. First thing is this. Let's look at it culturally. Number one, a woman was viewed as property. You had no rights. There was nothing. So imagine, let me put it like this, because see, this is hard for ladies in this day and time to understand, okay? That you would be like a car, okay? You would be like a house. You are property. I'm trying to help you understand. You have no voice. It's not like, well, I'd kind of have a little bit of a voice, wouldn't I? No, you have no voice whatsoever. There's nothing in which you can say, well, hey, that's not right. Someone took advantage of me. Your property. Your property. So just like at home, you have property insurance. You have property things. You have things that you call your property. That's all you were. And Jesus comes along and goes, no, that's not what was intended here. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Number two is this. Jesus raised the status of women. Jesus raised the status of women. Did you know, and did you notice in there, that what the disciples were shocked about was not that there could be divorce, okay? But that a woman could be divorced. The woman could divorce a husband. What? How could this be? They thought this, that because God had said, okay, you can have divorce, but the reason why I did it was because they had hard hearts. Okay. It was because God was trying to step in and protect the woman. God was trying to step in. So let's look at this here. Number three, divorce was granted by God to protect the woman. Without it, it was a death sentence. Because go back to the first thing. What are you? Your property. If you have no rights, you have no home. If you're property, you have no cash. Because you are property. You are a thing. You are not a person at that point. I know that in the United States we go, wow, I can't even fathom that. Well, guess what? This is what Jesus was running into. And it's why that if you remember, if this has always bothered you before, and it should, that when they caught the woman in adultery, okay, ladies, I know you've asked this question, because I've asked the question. How come when they bring the lady in adultery before Jesus and they say, hey, you know, we're supposed to stone her and everything else. What do you say? And he says, well, you know, let those, you know, without sin cast the first stone. Okay. But we're all going, it takes two. Where's the dude? Okay. We got the dudette. We got the lady. Where's the dude? But if you're property, if you have no rights, but that the man can divorce you. What they thought was is this. Divorce wasn't just okay by God. It was good. It was good for you to be divorced. It was not just okay, but God would say that's okay in the sense of it's good. In other words, it's not evil. It's not sin. You know what they thought? The reason why they brought the lady in front is because the man couldn't commit adultery. Whoa. See how it's a little upside down? And you see how Jesus adds to it and says, hey, you know something? If you divorce like that or if she divorces, you just need to know that he, listen to this, he is making her commit adultery. That's when the disciples went, whoa, then who can be married then? Suddenly it's not a man's only world, all right? And Jesus looking at him saying, the sin is in there. Now, I know that when we talk about the subject of divorce, where we've always got people within our churches who've gone through divorce, we're going to talk about the way God views that, what is going on there. Is there any restoration? Does that mean, you know, I get a question sometimes be like, oh man, does this mean that every single day that I'm with my, you know, mate that I chose to marry and now that I'm sticking with them, that I'm always living in adultery? You know, what does this mean? Well, what if my kids hear that? What will they think of me? We're going to talk about that. Okay. We're going to go through those things here in just a minute because there's some things here that what Jesus is trying to outline is you can't just say to the woman, you're in adultery. And that divorce was good for the man without understanding it's bad for both. It's not the best of things. Okay. Number four is this. Jesus was limiting what could be done to someone else. Okay. Jesus was limiting. So here's what's going on. When Moses said, yes, we'll permit you to divorce and give her the divorce paper. Because you're property, ladies. Okay. In that time, because you're seen as property. Without the divorce paper, what does that mean? You can never marry again, but the guy can go do whatever he wants to go do. The divorce paper was there so that she would have someone then that could marry her to take care of her. Because since you have no rights, you have no property, you have no money, you have no job, you have nothing. You know what the men were doing by giving that divorce? If they didn't give the divorce paper, it was a death sentence. She had no way to earn a living. She had no way to do anything whatsoever. She couldn't marry someone else because, well, you don't have a divorce paper. Get this, ladies. It had gotten so bad that if the man didn't like the way that you cooked, he could divorce you. If you burnt something, how would that, would you have a little bit? I mean, it's already pressure enough, right? When you fix a meal for someone else, I always feel the pressure of, is it undercooked? Is it just right? Is everybody okay? Is everybody happy? You know, I want everyone to be happy. Imagine the feeling of I could be divorced if this is burnt. Men in our day and time, you know, that would be like, what? You did what? You can't do that. Men, if it's burnt, all you need to look at her and say is you know, I like it with a little bit of smoky flavor. It's just bringing out the smoky flavor and things. It's not burnt, right? I'll never forget one of the men in my church. He said, you know, it was early on in our marriage. And he said, we married young. And he said, we were like 18 when we got married and everything else. And he said, you know, I had a lot to learn. And he said, when, you know, I said, I made the mistake of sharing with my wife several times. When mama makes it, I saw every woman go like this. Every man was like, yeah, what? What's wrong with that? When mama made it, what? Okay. Men, if you haven't figured this one out, and if you're single, let me help you, okay? Don't ever say that. Unless you're going to finish a sentence with, when mama made it, it wasn't as good as yours, okay? That is the acceptable phrase to use. But you don't use, when mama makes it, she makes it this way. Because let me tell you what's about to happen. There's a spatula in her hand, okay? It could be metal. You better hope it's plastic. It's coming your way very quickly. And it's going to visit you. And you're going to be like, what? What? I was just saying. Okay. And he said, finally, she was being very patient, very forgiving, very kind. But he had done that several times. And she finally whirled around and she said, you know something? If you want it the way your mama made it, she lives right down the street. You go get your mama and make it that way. And he was like, what did I say wrong? You know, we as men, we don't get it. Okay. But men don't do that. But in that day and time, if you burn it, he could just say, no. I'm done with you. You know what? I don't like your attitude. You know what? I don't like your hairstyle. You know what? I don't like the way you look. You know what? Wow. And Jesus looks at him and says, hey, guys, you can't just flippantly do this stuff. You just need to know you just sent her in adultery. What? We always thought this was good. And he was like, no, it's out of the hardness of your heart. See, what God was doing was this. He was exposing the hardness of men's hearts by making them have to publicly commit that they were having a divorce, that they were writing it up. See, it was a private issue, but now it was being exposed publicly. And that's what God was doing. God was looking at that man and saying, I want everyone to know what a lousy guy you are, that just because her hair was this way or just because she burnt the food, I want everybody to know the hardness of your heart. That's what God was doing, is he was exposing their flippancy. Number talked in there about the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. If you've ever read that verse before and heard it, you know, when people talk about it, I've just always heard it, you know, throughout my life and wondered, well, what does that mean? You know, because eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, but Jesus comes along and talks about grace and forgiveness and that sort of thing. But there's still this eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. That's actually a limiting kind of thing. And we're seeing it today in Israel and Gaza, okay, because they don't just do an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, do they? It's eyes for eyes and teeth for teeth. And what God was trying to show in his law was, yes, if a wrong has been committed, it needs to be corrected, but don't go way far out there. The eye for eye, tooth for tooth was actually limiting. He didn't say if someone pokes out your eye, you get both of theirs. You get to poke out both theirs. Or if they knock a tooth out, you get all of their teeth. But that's the problem, because what happens when you're wronged? I don't want to just go up to the point that they wronged me. I want to go what? Past that. We one up somebody, right? Someone plays a practical joke on you. What do you do? What should be your response, right? You don't just go back to the level, right? Anybody can do that. We go beyond. But the problem is when we have retribution in our hearts, what do we usually do? We don't just go up to the point that they wronged us. We go way past. And what Jesus was trying to say is this. This is a limiting thing. This is trying to show the hardness of the people's hearts of what was going on. Let's move on here. Number five, marriage is the picture of Christ and the church. Okay. Marriage is the picture of Christ and the church. And Jesus is trying to say to them, hey guys, you got to stick with this. You got to go through it. You got to meet the needs of the other person. Now, I know that we've got divorced people around and this is when they can suddenly feel beat up and all of the other things that go along with it. The beautiful thing of grace is that grace is greater than all of our sin. The problem for the church has been, we've either gone to one side or the other. We've either gone to the side that just like anything goes, like what Hillel would have taught, okay, just do whatever you want to do. Or we go to the side of, man, if you've ever been divorced, it feels like that it comes across as like the unpardonable sin. Have you ever noticed that? It's just like this huge thing. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, now, it is a big deal before God, but it's not unforgivable, and it's not anything that God writes down and goes, oh, this is the worst thing ever, and you just need to know that now then you're the worst thing ever, and in the church you should always, you know, kind of slump when you walk around because you're of lower class than the rest of us who are not. And for some reason we hold on to that. What boggles my mind about the church is this. If you know anything about the Apostle Paul's past, as much as people love to quote Paul, if you know anything about his past, was Paul a murderer? Yes, he was. Did Paul make orphans of children? Yes, he did. He admits to it. He says, I did it. And yet God used him in a miraculous and marvelous way to show us what grace can do and how God can come in. But I can tell you that if you mention divorce in a lot of churches now, it's probably like, oh man, that's like the unpardonable sin. But you know, I was reading Corinthians the other day, and Paul's just an awesome dude. Not if he would have killed your kid. And he did. You wouldn't have been around going, man, isn't he the greatest apostle? You'd have to give some forgiveness to the Apostle Paul. And Paul comes along in 1 Corinthians 7, and he tries to clear up all of it. And he tries to say, here's what you need to know. It is not ideal. And I want you to know, I've yet to speak to a divorced person that said, I loved the whole divorce thing. It was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I'm hoping that I get married and get to go through divorce again. I've never met that person. Every person I've ever met, even the ones that went through infidelity in marriage or abuse in marriage, they never said to me, it's the greatest thing that ever happened to me. It wasn't. I've never met anybody who said, this was God's best for my life. See, marriage is supposed to be the ideal, but God also knows it doesn't always go the ideal way. That's called sin, and every one of us in here have it. That's why I don't look at a person who's been divorced as being a less than person, no more than I do the person who had a theft problem at age 21 and they've corrected their life and they're walking anew. I don't sit there and think, there goes a thief. I don't think that. And I don't think God does either. I don't look at a divorced person and goes, there goes an adulterer. Because I truly believe that if they've come before God and confessed, God, I know this is not what you had for me. I know this was not the right thing to do. But from here on out, I'm going to be committed to the person I'm currently married with. Then that's between them and the Lord. Now, if that person starts going through repetitive cycles, that's not repentance, is it? Now we got a problem. It's like the thief at age 21 who repented, but if they start back at 25 and 28, we can't just go, oh, well, it's not a big deal. We have to say, no. We got to help this person. It doesn't make them a less than person. We got to help them. We got to find accountability for them. We got to help them grow up. But the problem is so many times that we've had in our churches where it was almost like you were this less than kind of a person. So the way I view it is I usually look at it case by case. If a man is 50 and a lady's 50, they had a divorce when they were 25. And they've said, you know what, I'm committed to this person and I shouldn't have done that. And bam, I look back and boy, that wasn't good. And I'm not sitting there going, well, you know, even when you're 60, we're going to hold it against you. Why? Why would we do that? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Because if you're not going to hold the Apostle Paul for the murders that he committed, you cannot hold it against somebody for the divorce that they went through. It means that before God, yes, it is not the ideal. It is not the best. We want marriages to stay together. So hear me correctly on this. We want marriages to stay together. But I will tell you, in most churches, by the time it reaches the point of divorce, they finally tell their pastor. I wish I could say most people early on brought me in or brought another pastor or a counselor in. Most of the time, by that time, it's already a foregone conclusion. It's already happened or is in the process of happening. It is hard to get it turned back around. A few times, we've been able to do that and get help and get those things restored. But you know, sometimes it's already happened. It's already taken place. We really need to get back to Scripture and say, you know something? Yes, it is not God's ideal. Okay, it is sin, but that doesn't mean that it's not covered. Just like the Apostle Paul had to have a great deal of covering for what he did. And he would tell you that. But what he does know is this. If you're married to somebody, stick with it because you represent Christ and the church. You can't have this flippant attitude. How would you like it if Jesus one day woke up and said, you know something? I'm a little tired of Alex. You know, I want a divorce from him. Ouch. Well, you know what? Alex did pretty good today. I'm going to go back over there and re-propose to that little guy. I kind of liked him today. He came through for me. Oh, next day, he wasn't so good. He's out again. No, the next day, he did really well. Oh, he's had a good few couple of weeks. Oh, he's had a really bad couple of weeks, and most of you are aware of it. He's out. No, it is supposed to be a commitment. We want to do our very best to reflect Christ and the church. Next thing is this. If I've been divorced, am I damaged goods? I've had people ask me almost the same question verbatim in private. You are not damaged goods. God still has a marvelous plan for your life. His plan is not all on us. He is sovereign. He is God. He covers over all of our sin. No one of us in this room is better than anybody else in front of God. No one is any worse in front of God. It's all, I don't know if you've ever heard this phrase before, but it's all equal footing at the foot of the cross. Because all of us need a Savior. All of us need grace. And I will tell you that if any of you in this room have been divorced, the thing that you should do is go before God and say, you know, God, I didn't live up to your ideal. It is sin. I'm going to call it what it is. But I am committed now within this relationship to make it. That's what you do. Just like the thief needs to go before God and say, you know what? I did not honor you. I sinned. I didn't do what I was supposed to do. But from this point on, I'm going to live an honest life. I'm going to live righteous before you because that's what you expect of me. That's the way that I'm going to live. In all areas, that's the way we should live. You're not damaged goods. You're not damaged goods. Number 7, Jesus is pointing to the solution. Get a soft heart. Get a soft heart. Did you notice that he said this? He said, the reason why Moses gave you this thing is because of the hardness of your heart. You know how to protect yourself and to do the things of God and to do them well? Have a soft heart towards him. Tell me this morning, if Jesus were asking you, how soft is your heart towards me? What would you say? Are there things in Scripture that you're like, well, I know it's in there, but I don't care anyway. It's a hard heart. Are you looking at your spouse with disdain and ugliness and attitudes and kids? Are you looking at parents with attitudes and ugliness? Young professionals, you thinking, I'm going to do it better than mom and dad. I'll show them. That's pride, man. That's pride. What's your heart like? Is it soft? Is it soft before God? Did you come to his word and you say, hey, that's what it says. That's what I'm going to do. We all need that question asked every once in a while. Your GPS is this, your good practical stuff. Some of you will be alarmed by this statement, okay? Marriage is not about happiness. Now then, some of you have woken back up, right? Marriage is not about happiness. It is about holiness. Here's the problem with most marriages. They get married because the other one makes them happy. You make me happy. Now, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I'm not saying go out there and find the most miserable person that you can find and say, you know what? You make me unhappy. Therefore, you should be able to make me holy. Let's get married. Okay? That is not the philosophy at all. What I'm saying is this. And those of you who are married, you may not want to nod your head like publicly because your spouse may not. Okay? They won't always make you happy. Matter of fact, many times they will irritate you and aggravate you. And how many times have I told them? I don't like that. Why do they keep fixing that meal that they know I don't like that? I will never forget my father. Met my mom within a church. My dad was worship leader. And the pianist in the church was my grandmother. So how fitting that it was that dad would need to go over to that house to practice with the piano player, and oh, look who lives there. He would go over there quite often, probably way too much for just practice. But there would my mom be. And every Sunday afternoon, my grandmother fixed tuna fish sandwiches. Now, one thing I've learned about tuna fish sandwiches, either you're a, I love tuna fish sandwiches, or who invented this junk? This is terrible, okay? It is two ways. There is no middle ground. It's not a, it's either way. My father ate those tuna fish sandwiches for like a year. Every Sunday afternoon, that's what they would do. One day, my mom and dad got married. On that first Sunday afternoon, my mom made a tuna fish sandwich. My dad says, I don't like tuna fish sandwiches. What? You've been coming over our house for a year. What do you mean? You've eaten like 50 of these things. And he probably said the exact amount, right? Because if you don't like something, you keep track. And she goes, I can't believe this. You've always eaten, you never complain or anything else. And he said, love covers a multitude of bad food. Okay, now the scripture is love covers a multitude of sins. Okay, love covers a multitude of bad food. And she goes, I cannot believe you're doing that. And he says, well, now that I have an option, I would just like to make it known. You know something, sometimes just things happen, right? Things about them that you thought were cute in the dating part, now then they're really irritating. You know how I know this? I'm a pastor. I hear about it all the time, and it even happens in my house, amazingly. Things that you thought were precious, and they're not precious after 5 years of it. You know what Billy Graham's wife said? They asked her, what's the hardest thing about marriage? She said, it's just so daily. What a great line. It's just so that you're with them every day. You need a break sometimes. But I want you to understand this. It's about your holiness, not about your happiness. And yes, we want you to be happy. There's no doubt about that. But it's really about your holiness. So, ladies, the next time your man's a little cheesed off at you, right? Now, none of you, but as you're talking to a friend over coffee, okay? Next time he's a little irritated, you can just let him say, honey, I'm just here to make you holy. That's what I'm here to do. Make you more righteous. Make you more loving. Make you more kind. Make you more forgiving, right? At the end of the day, this is what Jesus was getting after. Because the disciples were like, well, who can stay married? Who could pull this off? Even they knew it's going to take God. It's not about your happiness, although you will have those days. It's about your holiness. God using that person to refine and reshape. Those of you who've been married over a year, you know this principle. The first year, you usually don't have this. It's usually that second and third year that suddenly it's like, wow, as Billy Graham's wife said, this is daily. This is tough. But through God, you can do it. Now, I want you to understand that while we as a church are going to embrace anybody that comes in, no matter what background, what's been going through and stuff like that, we do have lines. We do have certain things that we wouldn't place a leader in a position if they have not repented of sin and gone through counseling and you know, if it's a big deal kind of a thing. You need to know that, okay? We're not just going to flippantly throw things out. The ideal best is for people to stay married. But if you have gone through a divorce, just go to God. Deal with that and say, but you know something? From here on out, I'm going to be committed. I'm going to make it through this. I'm going to reflect who you are and staying committed. Okay? That's where we need to be. I want everyone just to bow their heads and close their eyes this morning.